This is Cross Hope, a daily word of hope and inspiration with Randy Snyder, Senior Minister of Crossview Christian Church. Now, with today's message from Cross Hope, here's Randy Snyder.
Well, psychologists call it all or nothing thinking. Some of you manifest all or nothing thinking in your life, in your marriage, in raising your kids, with school, with work, and in every area of life. What does all or nothing thinking mean? It doesn't mean it's evil or bad. It's just a way of thinking that thinks in terms of black and white, that things are either all good or they're all bad. And some people do that with their marriage. It's either all good or it's all bad. They look at the way their kids are being raised. Well, it's all good or it's terrible. Your job can be looked at that way. All or nothing attitude about your job. My job is awful. Or it's all good. And it's not a good way to live, because it's very frustrating for this reason. Most people who possess an all or nothing attitude eventually opt for the nothing. And nothing's good. This one psychologist gave an illustration of it, that he had a student in one of his college classes who missed 5 questions out of 200. Now, do the math. If you're a mathematician at all, that's a 97.5% correct. I was a C student in college. 97.5%, I would have been doing the dance of joy, you know, that I had that good of a score. But this young lady saw that she missed 5 out of 200, told one of her classmates, "Well, I'm going to fail this class." Where did she get that? All or nothing thinking. I've got to get 200 questions right or I'm going to fail this class. There are a lot of areas that people have that, but I'm going to share this with you. I really think this is significant. There's one area of life where you and I do need to have an all or nothing attitude about. Believe it or not, and you can write it down. All or nothing attitude about who Jesus Christ is. Either he is everything, all that he claimed to be, or he's nothing. I do not happen to believe that Jesus is somewhere in between, that, you know, I can accept 60% of what he said and 20% of what he claimed to be and 40% of the miracles or whatever. He is either all or nothing. We're not given any other option in Scripture, that Jesus is everything he claimed to be or nothing at all. Today we're going to study a passage in John, get this, that I have read at every funeral I've ever conducted in all my ministry. It's in John 14 says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled." Jesus is speaking, by the way. "Trust in God, trust also in me." Jesus calls attention to himself. Listen to that again. Jesus calls attention to himself and he says, "Don't let your heart be troubled." Stirred up is what the word means, agitated. Anybody here with an agitated heart? We all have an agitated heart, so to speak, emotionally. Some of you are agitated because it's Christmas. Some of you are agitated because of job uncertainty. Some of you are agitated because of home insecurity. You're agitated for a lot of reasons. And Jesus said, "Don't let your heart be agitated or stirred up. You believe in God the Father, believe also in me." Do you know what Jesus was doing? Jesus wasn't saying, there's two beliefs here, believe in God, but also tag a belief in on me. He was claiming equality with the Father. We're going to read in just a few moments where Jesus said, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." That's what that means. You trust in God the Father, you trust in me. Can you imagine how arrogant that is if it's not true? Imagine how presumptuous that is, a statement, if it's not true. Jesus, get this, called attention to himself in all humility. He's the only person who could ever do that, could say, "You trust in God, trust also in me." Well, some people think this passage in John 14 may be the most important words that Jesus ever uttered. We'll continue this message on all or nothing thinking tomorrow on Cross Hope. Today is message number 7 in an 8-week series on the subject of one word, the word believe. We've talked about how believing is so important in your life. I'm not going to review today because there's just too many messages to review. But the one thing I'm going to review is this, is that what you believe about people oftentimes is impacted, get this, by one person saying something to you about a person, and then you believe something for months. Let me give you an example. Some of you that started a new job in maybe recent years, you may have been taking a tour of your office or the place where you were working, and you walk by somebody's desk, and somebody who's giving you the tour leans over and says, "Stay away from him. Watch out for her." You know, and they make signals to you about what it means, and you believe that about that person. And maybe 2 or 3 years go by, and you still believe something that somebody told you 2 or 3 years ago, get this, that may or may not be true. And a lot of things that we believe in life have been influenced by things that people have said about other people that we find out aren't true, in the same way that people may have said things about you in that regard. And somebody has a totally negative impression about you because of one thing somebody else said about you. Bring up verse 2. "In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you." You've heard me say this before. Many of you have. The word place there is the word topos. We get the word topographical. I did a funeral for a man in Georgia who was the lobbyist for all the surveyors and map makers of the state of Georgia. He would go to the legislature every day and you know, try to get legislation to help map makers and surveyors who did their job in Georgia. That's what he did for a living. So when I had his funeral, the church was packed full of surveyors and map makers, cartographers. And I loved sharing this verse with these people and say, the word is topos. And I just saw their eyes came open as their face lit up and they recognized a term in their work, that that's the word Jesus used. I go to prepare a topos for you, a real place, not something mystical in fantasy land, not something ethereal that's kind of a never-never land, but a real place. And Jesus had the audacity to say, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to prepare a place for you. Let's bring up the next verse. "And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am." I want you to write this down. If someone were to ask me, how would you describe heaven? What's heaven going to be like? I'm going to give you one sentence. Heaven is where Jesus Christ is. That is the greatest description I can give to you of heaven. It's not just a place where the streets are paved with gold. That's beautiful language. But let me tell you something, if you're facing death, just walking on a street of gold isn't that big a thing. I want to be where Jesus is. I want to be where the life giver is. I want to be where the one, the life sustainer, the one who is eternal forever. So heaven is where Jesus Christ is. And Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you so that where I am, that's where you'll be. Heaven is about being united with Christ forever. Heaven is about being united with Christ forever, and that's the greatest description of heaven there can be. Well, all this week on Cross Hope, we're in the 7th message out of 8 on the subject of belief. Belief is the most important word in your vocabulary because you and I are the result of what we believe. And that statement really is true. Your marriage is impacted by what you believe. Your children are impacted by what you believe. All of life is impacted by those words, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. It continues tomorrow on Cross Hope, Sirius XM 131. Verse 6 is probably, in my opinion, the most important verse in all of the New Testament. Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Jesus made a trifold statement here. I am the way, the truth, and the life. What does that mean? He's the way to the Father. He is the truth of the Father, and he's the life of the Father. Everything in God the Father is in him. That's what he was saying. Let's talk about that phrase very quickly, the way. Jesus never said, I'm pointing you to the way. I'm directing you to the right path. He claimed to be the path itself. That's what's intriguing. Many religious leaders have said, I can point you to the way of truth. I can point you to the way of fulfillment. I can point you to this way or that way. But Jesus said, I am the way. What a difference. We live in a country today where people are geographically illiterate. Nobody knows where anything is. Have you ever asked for directions lately at any place? Nobody knows where anything is. I stopped at a gas station where I said to a man, can you tell me how to get to such and such a place? And he said, sir, if I can't see it, I can't tell you how to get there. That's all I know is what's around me. And he was serious. He wasn't being facetious. That's all I know is how to get to anything I can see. Well, Jesus wasn't confused at all about giving people the right directions. He said, I am the direction. You want to hook up with somebody important in your life. You want to hook up with that which will advance your career. You want to hook up with the one who's going to bless your life. You hook up with Christ, who said, I am the way. Not a way. Not one of many ways, but I am the way. And then he said, I am the truth. This is really important. It's one thing to talk about truth and to teach truth. It's another thing to be the truth. I want you to do an experiment that we did in the first service. I want all of you to think about a math teacher that you had in high school. Now, you may have taken just general math. You may have taken algebra and geometry, or you may have been really smart and you took calculus and trigonometry. I only got as far as geometry. That's all I could handle. But think of a math teacher. I want to picture that man, that woman, in your mind and ask you this question. Would it really mattered what kind of character they possessed in terms of teaching you an algebraic equation? No. Would it matter about the character of that man or woman in terms of teaching you geometric shapes or trigonometry algorithms or whatever term you want to use? Would have that mattered at all? No, you said they're just teaching us facts. But when somebody comes along and says, I am the truth, they better live up to that. Listen to what William Barclay, a Scottish Bible scholar, said about this. I think this is really powerful. There is one all-important thing about moral truth. The character of the man or woman who teaches academic or scientific truth does not much affect his message or her message. A person's character does not really affect their teaching of geometry, astronomy, or Latin verbs, but if a person proposes to teach moral truth, their character makes all the difference in the world. The adulterer who teaches the necessity of purity, the greedy man or woman who teaches the value of generosity, the domineering man or woman who teaches the beauty of humility, the irritable person who teaches the beauty of serenity, the embittered person who teaches the beauty of love, is bound to be ineffective. Moral truth cannot be conveyed solely in words. It must be conveyed in example. And that is precisely where the greatest human teacher falls down. No teacher has ever embodied the truth he taught except one teacher, Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God.
You know, if Jesus is who he claimed to be, there's nothing more important than knowing the one who is the way, the truth, and the life. We'll continue tomorrow on Cross Hope on Sirius XM 131, the Family Talk Channel.
Moral truth cannot be conveyed solely in words. It must be conveyed in example. And that is precisely where the greatest human teacher falls down. No teacher has ever embodied the truth he taught except one teacher, Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God, who said, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. What does that mean very briefly? To say you're the life was very important to a Jewish person listening to this, because all of the Old Testament talks about the giver of life, God the Father. The preserver of life, the sustainer of life, the one who redeems our life from the pit in the Old Testament. And all those terms were vividly understood by the Jew of the day. And Jesus comes along and said, I am the life that you talk about in the Old Testament. I'm the one who is the life giver. He was claiming everything in the universe of all moral authority, more all moral power. Everything that Jesus claimed to be was the ultimate claim of anyone in the universe. There is no more greater claim than what Jesus Christ, the Son of God, claimed when he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Let's bring up verses 7 through 11. Jesus is speaking again. He's in verse 7. If you really knew me, you would know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him. You have seen him. Philip said, Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. Jesus answered, don't you know me, Philip, even after I have been among you such a long time? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. To me, in my opinion, the claim that Jesus made when he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, is the most astounding. Can you imagine how arrogant that would be? Can you imagine me getting up on a Sunday morning and say, folks, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Somebody would be dialing 911 and let's get this guy to the psychiatric ward immediately, and they should, because it's totally crazy. It's absurd. It's what you have with Jesus, what Josh McDowell said. You have a trilemma, not a dilemma, but a trilemma with Jesus Christ. Either Jesus was the greatest liar that ever lived. He was the greatest lunatic that ever lived. He was totally crazy to claim what he claimed to be. Or your third choice is Lord. Liar, lunatic, or Lord. It's all or nothing. It really is all or nothing. Here's what I want to leave you with. I read the best advice about marriage that I've ever heard anyone say just recently. And some of you need to write this down. This is good stuff. It's about good advice for your job. It's good advice for what you do in life. And here it is. Nobody ever finds the right person to be married to. But this psychologist said, nobody ever finds the right person. Here's what you find. You decide to cultivate the relationship you have with the person you've chosen. Nobody finds the right person. You're not the right person for anybody, and neither am I. But we decide, and another person decides to cultivate that relationship with you in order to make it work. Nobody finds the right job. Nobody finds the right house. Nobody finds the right city to live in. We cultivate what we have and make the best of it with what we have and those resources in life. I thought it was good advice, and it may be good advice for somebody today who's wondering if I ever will find the right person. No, you never will. What a relief. You'll never find the right person. You cultivate the relationship with the person you have. Now, why am I saying that? For this reason. When you look at Jesus Christ, you are finding the perfect relationship in life because you are having a relationship with the person that said this, I am the way, the truth, and the life. When you look at Jesus Christ, you are finding the perfect relationship in life because you are having a relationship with the person that said this, I am the way, the truth, and the life. It doesn't get any better than that if that statement is true. And it really is an all or nothing decision that we have to make. I have to come to the decision. You have to come to the decision. It came to me my freshman year in college in the basement of the dorm. I remember being at 2 a.m. and I remember saying to myself, either this stuff is true or it's not. And if it's not true, I'm wasting 4 years here to study to prepare for the ministry. I better get out and do something else. You need to decide today that Jesus is either the way, the truth, and the life, or he's nothing. He's not something in between. It is an all or nothing situation. I read about a grandfather and a grandson fishing at a lake on a pier. Grandfather's baiting the hook for his grandson. They're talking about different things. Grandpa, why does thunder happen? What's lightning? And he's just answering all the questions that his grandson is asking. And then out of the blue, the grandson asks his grandfather, Grandpa, does anyone ever see God? Does anyone ever see God? And I love what the grandfather said. He said, Son, it's getting so I don't see anything else. Does anyone ever see God? It's getting to the place where I don't see anything but God. That man had reached a point in his life where what he saw in everything about around him in life, in nature and in his family, he saw the hand of the Lord. He saw what we discussed last week. He saw the glory of God, which means to see the hand of God. When you accept Jesus Christ as the way, the truth, and the life, listen carefully, you start seeing everything differently, just like my dad did. You look at your children differently. You look at your marriage differently. You look at your house differently. You look at your career differently. Why? Because you have new eyes. You have new eyes. The greatest discovery in your life is when you discover that Jesus Christ is everything he claimed to be. He's Lord. Lord of heaven and earth. Lord of my life. Lord of my past. He's the Lord of my present. He's the Lord of my future. He's the Lord of everything good in my life. Everything negative. He's the Lord of everything. And the Lord of everything can work in everything in your life to bring glory to him and to bring blessing to you. He really can. all things work together for good. To everybody? No, it says in Romans 8, all things work together for good to those who love God and are called according to His purpose. Let's pray together. Father in heaven, thank you for your word today about who Jesus is. What a statement. It's an all or nothing deal. Whether we recognize it or not, it is all or nothing. Your son Jesus is either everything that he claimed to be or he's nothing. We're not given a third option that he's something in the middle. He's most of what he claimed to be. He's most of what he said. He's most of what he did. He is all or nothing. That's the choice we have today.
Well, believe it or not, that's your choice and that's my choice, to believe all or nothing when it comes to Jesus Christ. It is an all or nothing decision. Jesus claimed to be the way, the truth, and the life. Either that's true or it's not. Next week, we conclude this 8-week series with a message from John 1 about receiving, believing, and becoming. Those are words we talk about in this series on belief, on Cross Hope. Our website is crosshope.org. crosshope.org to listen to any message you may have missed, also to find out how you can become a part of this ministry that we call Cross Hope Radio Ministry. God bless you.
You have been listening to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. For more information or to listen to or download a copy of today's message, go to crosshope.org. That web address again is www.crosshope.org. Be sure to tune in each weekday at this same time to Cross Hope with Randy Snyder. This program has been a production of Cross Hope Ministries.